Hi, I'm Shravan, and I'll be presenting the paper Catching Whales and Minnows Using Wi-Fi Net, Deconstructing Non-Wi-Fi Interference Using Wi-Fi Hardware. This is joint work with my colleague Ashish Patro and my advisor Suman Banerjee at University of Wisconsin-Madison. So let me try to introduce the problem by giving you a very small, simple example. Let's say you have one access point, and there is a user that's connected to this access point and is trying to watch a video. And for some reason, the video starts buffering, right? And let's say, in this particular case, it's because of the losses on the wireless link. Now, what could be the reason for this packet loss? Well, it could be because of weak signal. That is, the laptop is sort of far away from the access point. That is, the signal strength is not high enough for the packet to be decoded successfully. Or it could be because of interference from Wi-Fi devices. So there are these other Wi-Fi devices which happen to transmit at the same time, for example, leading to collisions, which can therefore result in packet losses. Or it could be because of interference from a variety of non-Wi-Fi devices. So there are devices like analog cordless phones, wireless video cameras, microwave ovens, Bluetooth devices, ZigBee devices, and even game controllers like Xbox, which sort of share the spectrum with Wi-Fi in some sense. So now, given that there are so many reasons for this particular packet to get lost, the high-level question that we want to answer is, well, is it possible to determine the exact reason for this packet loss? So let me try to be a little more precise here. Let's say we're given a target setting of an enterprise wireless LAN. That is, you have a bunch of access points, and let's say they're connected to a central controller over the Ethernet backplane. And you are given some clients, right? Laptops, smartphones, and so on. And in this particular case, you have like 6 links in this particular network. So if you were to monitor the link quality, right? Let's say you have links on the y-axis here, and the link delivery ratio on the x-axis. And let's say this is what we get. So we're able to see that L1 and L2 have poor link delivery ratio, L3 and L4 have a mediocre performance, whereas L5 and L6 have a very good link delivery ratio. So the question we want to ask is, well, can we identify why certain links are underperforming, right? I want to know why L1 and L2 are not performing as well as L5 and L6. So, for example, it could be the case that L1 is being impacted by a wireless video camera, and let's say its impact is 0.7 on a scale of 0 to 1. 0 being that whenever the camera is on, there are no losses on the link because of the camera, or if the impact is 1, meaning that whenever the camera is on, all the packets on this link get lost. It could also happen that a link has 2 non-Wi-Fi interferers. It's suffering from interference from a microwave oven, which has an impact of 0.3, or a cordless phone, which has an impact of 0.1. Similarly, a link L3 over here is being impacted by a link in the network itself. So it's Wi-Fi to Wi-Fi interference over here, and this has an impact of 0.2. And finally, L4 is not really suffering from interference, but it's suffering from a weak signal problem, right? So we sort of want to come up with a system which sort of helps us determine what is the exact reason for packet loss in each case. So there is work which talks about Wi-Fi to Wi-Fi interference, and one such example is SPI, which is our own work which we presented in NSDI last year, which stands for Passive Interference Estimator. So this tries to quantify the interference of a Wi-Fi interferer on a Wi-Fi link. So we wanted to focus on this other issue, which is non-Wi-Fi to Wi-Fi interference, right? Can we come up with similar solutions which try to sort of quantify the amount of interference from on Wi-Fi links from non-Wi-Fi interferers? And specifically, we want to know if we can do this using Wi-Fi only hardware, right? So basically, there are these whales, which we are basically strong interferers, and there are these minnows, which are like weak interferers, which have like lesser impact. And you can think of the problem as we're trying to come up with a net to sort of catch these whales and minnows, right? So it turns out this is actually a much harder problem compared to Wi-Fi interference quantification. And to give an example of that, let me take a step back and talk about PI a little bit. So PI tries to quantify the interference between two Wi-Fi links. So for example, if you have Wi-Fi link 1 and Wi-Fi link 2, and in this particular case, let's say the link 1 happens to transmit 4 packets, and here's a timeline for that. And at the same time, link 2 happens to transmit 2 more packets. Now, if you were to monitor the status of link 1, and if you see that, let's say packet 1 is lost, packet 2 is successful, 3 is successful, 4 is lost again. Now, if you can see that whenever there seems to be an overlap between the transmissions of link 1 and link 2, the packets on link 1 seem to get lost, right? So You can sort of say that, well, looks like link 2 interferes with link 1, having gathered enough samples which tell us that this scenario happens. Now, let's say what happens if we try to do sort of a similar thing for non-Wi-Fi interference. Let's say you have given the same link, which happens to transmit 4 packets. But instead of a Wi-Fi interfere, you have a non-Wi-Fi interfere. Let's say a cordless phone, which happens to, you know, sort of transmit some signals. Now, the first question here is, well, how can a Wi-Fi card actually detect the fact that there is a non-Wi-Fi device transmission, right? A Wi-Fi card cannot decode a non-Wi-Fi transmission. In particular, how can it say this is actually a cordless phone transmission? And how can we also say that all these 3 transmissions in this particular case are actually coming from the same phone, right? There could be a different phone over here which happens to transmit at the same time. So the problem here is that there's no MAC address. There's a lack of ID, which is because of the fact that a Wi-Fi card cannot really decode a non-Wi-Fi transmission. Right? So these are sort of the challenges that we need to solve in Wi-Fi Net. So here is an overview of Wi-Fi Net. I'll give you an example. Let's say you have some access points and there is a client, and you have 2 different non-Wi-Fi interferers which you're interested in sort of understanding. So Wi-Fi Net builds upon something called AirShark, which is a software that we built, which tries to detect different non-Wi-Fi devices by running on top of a Wi-Fi card. So AirShark, for example, here helps each access point individually detect the type of interference it's experiencing. So for example, here AP1 says that I'm able to detect a microwave oven. AP2 says I'm able to see a microwave oven and a video camera. AP3, on the other hand, here says it's able to see a video camera. So in Wi-Fi Net, we take a step further and we say, well, we also want to understand the interference impact of these devices and also figure out the location. So to do that, we combine information from multiple access points, send it to a central controller, and perform device localization and also interference quantification. So for example, the output of the system looks something like this, where the controller says there is a microwave oven at location R1. There is a video camera at location R2, and it has an impact of 0.4 on link L3. Right, so this is a system that we're trying to build. So let me take a step back and sort of give you an idea about AirShark. So it's a software solution, again, that sort of uses Wi-Fi cards to detect different non-Wi-Fi devices. So without going into the details, I just wanted to give you a very brief idea about the input and output of the system. So the input is basically information from a wireless card, and we use this one of these emerging wireless cards, which gives us spectral samples. By spectral samples, I just mean some fine-grained information about the spectrum. It turns out to be, in this case, it is RSSI, or the power per subcarrier information that these cards expose. Using this information, we devised a device detection procedure based on some decision tree classification. And the output of the system are these tagged pulses. Now, pulses here are basically time frequency blocks indicating non-Wi-Fi device transmissions, and tag indicates the device type. So for example, let's say you are given this time frequency block and you're trying to understand the non-Wi-Fi device activity inside this block. So if there is an analog cordless phone which happens to be active, then AirShark will output one big pulse corresponding to this analog cordless phone, because an analog phone, once it is on, continuously transmits energy. Or for example, if there's a Zigbee device which happens to transmit 2 Zigbee packets, AirShark will output 2 Zigbee pulses corresponding to it. And similarly, if there's a Bluetooth device, it outputs short 1 megahertz wide pulses tagged with type Bluetooth. So specifically, this is the information about each pulse that we get from AirShark. We know the start and end timestamps of the pulse. We know the center frequency and bandwidth of the pulse, the average received power, as well as a tag which indicates the device type. So AirShark can only tell you that there is a transmission of type cordless phone. Right? It cannot tell you how many cordless phones there are, for example. So using this information, Wi-Fi Net controller combines information from the multiple AirShark nodes. Specifically, it takes information about these tagged pulses from each node, along with Wi-Fi packet receptions, and it tries to perform device localization and interference estimation. So, however, before we go into device localization and interference estimation, there are a couple of challenges that we have to solve, after which really localization and interference quantification become fairly straightforward. So the first challenge is, well, how do we identify the unique non-Wi-Fi pulses in the system? So for example, let's say you have a cordless phone, and you have 3 different access points, each running AirShark. The cordless phone pulse transmits a pulse, and each of these access points are able to hear it at different power levels. So at the controller, we have these 3 copies of the pulse. So the first question here is, how do we sort of consolidate them into a single pulse, right? How do we know that all these three pulses are actually coming from the same device without knowing an ID or a MAC address for this pulse? So to solve this, we use a very fairly simple approach where I'll take an example again to explain it. Let's say you have a cordless phone, it happens to transmit a pulse, and all these three access points are running AirShark. And let's say the first AP gets here two pulses, P1 and P2 of type cordless phone. The second AP also gets two pulses, P3 and P4, and the third AP receives pulse P5. Now, if you look at pulses P2 and P5, we see that they start at the same time, they end at the same time, they have the same center frequency, and they have the same bandwidth. So we apply this very simple heuristic, which tries to match the device types along with all these properties, and we say if we are able to match all these properties, then P2 and P5 are indeed the same pulses, right? They're coming from the same device. However, to do that, we have to be able to align the timelines of all access points. That is, we need the clocks at the access points to be synchronized. So what we do for that is we basically use the fact that we're running on top of a Wi-Fi card, and it so happens that the Wi-Fi card uses the same clock to timestamp the packets as well as these pulses. So once we synchronize the clocks at the access points using Wi-Fi packets, we can then apply this heuristic to find out that P2 and P5 are the same pulses, P1 and P3 are the same pulses, and P4 is a different pulse. Right? So at the end of this time synchronization procedure and application of this heuristic, we are able to determine the unique pulses in the system. So there's another challenge which we have to solve, which is how do we identify the unique device instances? So for example, we are at this stage, we have already determined the unique pulses in the system, right? But what happens if there is one more cordless phone, possibly of the same make and model, which can be active at the same time? And let's say it also has transmitted some pulses. So the question here is, how do we sort of segregate these pulses? Because without segregating the transmissions of each device, it will be difficult to sort of estimate the device's impact, right? So we want to identify how many cordless phones are present over here, and which cordless phone does each pulse belong to? So to do this, we basically use a clustering procedure, which makes use of some device-specific properties and some properties based on RSSI. And I will not go into the details of the procedure itself, but at the end of this clustering procedure, we're able to sort of determine the exact device instances which are present in the system. So just to give you a snapshot of the result over here, the first graph over here on the left-hand side shows show you the activity from four different cordless phone devices, which happen to be active at the same time, and we are using some timing-based properties to cluster and sort of figure out that there are actually four devices. Similarly, over here, there are two different microwave ovens which are on simultaneously, but using some timing property exhibited by microwave ovens, we're able to segregate their transmissions. Now, there are devices which do not sort of exhibit any sort of timing property. So for that, we use a generic RSSI-based mechanism to sort of cluster the device transmissions in the RSSI space. So that sort of acts as a proxy for the space dimension. So at the end of this phase, we're able to determine the unique devices and their transmissions. So here is a flow of operations just to recap. So there could be multiple devices, possibly of the same type, which could be active at the same time. And AirShark is running on top of each of the access points. Which outputs a pulses, and once we apply the time synchronization and heuristic to determine the unique pulses, we then apply this clustering procedure to determine the unique devices. So once we have these unique devices, we can then proceed to device localization and interference quantification. I'll talk a little bit about each of these. So device localization, we assume that the access point locations are known, and we implemented several algorithms. Some of them are very well known. So for example, a weighted centroid algorithm, where we basically look at the locations of the access, three access points with the highest signal strength and take an average of that. Or for example, fingerprinting approach, where once we know the fingerprints of the location we are trying to figure out where the device is, we can sort of match it to the closest fingerprint in the database. However, there is an overhead associated with such fingerprinting approaches, so we wanted to explore other mechanisms, and specifically we experimented with one model-based mechanism, which basically uses path loss models to sort of understand the device's location. So one of the challenges over here was that the transmit power of the device is actually unknown. Therefore, what we did was that we sort of used a model which actually works on the difference in the receive power of the access at the access points. So we, instead of taking each AP individually, we sort of take APs in pairs and try to process information from them to sort of figure out where the device is present. So I will not go into the details of the algorithm, but I just wanted to give in, sort of one example over here, where this is an example deployment in our computer sciences building, which is the ground floor of our building here, where there are 8 different access points, and the location denoted by the green star here shows you the actual one test case where we placed a cordless phone. So the way the algorithm works is that it takes each pair of access points, and they propagate a probability on this particular location. So for example, after processing information from one pair of access point, this is how the heat map looks like, where the different colors here show you the probability of the device being present, and the yellow circle over here sort of shows you where the device is most likely present. And as you add information from multiple pairs of access points, we see that the sort of the predicted location converges to the actual location over here, denoted by the intersection of two red lines. So I wanted to give you one example snapshot of the evaluation. Here, we experimented with multiple device types and two sample deployments. The graph here shows you the error in localization, where on the y-axis is a CDF and the x-axis is the error in meters. And as we can see, most of the algorithms perform fairly well, with the worst case error, I think, being less than 15 meters, and the median error was about less than equal to 4 meters. Finally, I want to talk about the interference estimation aspect. So once we determine the unique devices in the system, we can then apply a procedure which is very similar to that of PI, where we want to quantify the impact of each device on each Wi-Fi link. So we apply a very similar procedure where we try to identify the transmission overlaps between the Wi-Fi frames and the non-Wi-Fi pulses specifically, and we correlate these frame losses along with these transmission overlaps. Right? So this is very similar to PI. So let's say you have this Wi-Fi link, and we want to understand the impact of this cordless phone on this Wi-Fi link. And this Wi-Fi link happens to transmit, let's say, three packets in this case, and the cordless phone happens to transmit two pulses of type cordless phone. And now looking at the overlaps and looking at the loss or success probabilities, we can figure out what the impact of the device is. So for example, here, as you can see, that whenever there is an overlap, there is a packet loss. So this sort of helps us define a metric for impact, where we say that the impact over here is 1, because whenever there is an overlap, there is a loss. Right? So more formally, what we try to understand is the probability of loss given a transmission overlap. And of course, you have to worry about the cases where there could be multiple such interferers which are active at the same time. And it turns out that there is enough diversity in the transmission characteristics of different non-Wi-Fi devices, which sort of helps us determine the exact interference impact in each case. And there are some other extensions which you can have a look in the paper, which we talk about Wi-Fi to Wi-Fi interference, talking about different, the amount of interference also is dependent on the Wi-Fi rates and power levels, so we also take that into account. And you can apply a very similar procedure to also handle the sending side interference, which is a carrier sensing interference. So these extensions are in the paper, so I encourage you to read that. And so finally, just a couple of slides on the evaluation aspects. So here, the first experiment over here is to understand the impact of a single non-Wi-Fi device. So on the graph on the left-hand side, the x-axis shows the ground truth, where we perform some controlled experiments by switching on and off a single device and knowing exactly when the device was on and the device was off. And we determine its impact. And on the y-axis is Wi-Fi Net's estimate, which tries to calculate this in real time without exactly knowing when the device was on. And as you can see, most of the points are very close to the line x equals to y, indicating that our estimates are very close to the ground truth. And on the right-hand side, we show you the CDF of the same data, and it turns out that the error is less than 10% for more than 90% of these cases. We performed similar experiment for multiple devices. So here in this particular experiment, where we are going to sort of switch on multiple devices simultaneously, and we want to understand whether Wi-Fi Net is able to attribute the impact of each device correctly. So for example, on the graph on the left-hand side, we used 4 different interferers, an analog cordless phone, a frequency hopping cordless phone, a Zigbee device, and a Bluetooth device. And we wanted to see if Wi-Fi Net is able to correctly attribute the impact of each device. So here in this particular example, and both the phones had a higher impact compared to the other devices, ZigBee and Bluetooth, because of the topology versus that. And as you can see, the estimates are pretty close. We've performed many such experiments where we used 1, 2, 3, and 4 devices, and the graph on the right-hand side shows you the data from that, where on the y-axis is a CDF, and on the x-axis is the error in each case. So naturally, what we observed, that as you increase the number of devices, the amount of error sort of went up. And this was mainly because of the number of overlaps in the transmissions. As the spectrum becomes more crowded, it sort of becomes difficult to distinguish what is the exact impact of each device. However, we see that the error is still within 15% for more than 85% of the cases when we're using up to 4 simultaneous devices. And there are some other results in the paper. I will not bore you with the details of this picture, but there are results about multiple devices being active, possibly of the same type which could be active, different topologies that we experimented with. We also experimented with a mix of Wi-Fi and non-Wi-Fi interferers and tried to introduce some dynamics into the experiment. For example, node mobility or using different traffic mixes and Wi-Fi rates and so on, and the results are presented in the paper. So just to conclude, we presented Wi-Fi Net. It's a system to detect, localize, and estimate a non-Wi-Fi interference devices, non-Wi-Fi devices impact, and it has a fairly reasonable accuracy, both in terms of interference estimates and the location of the device. And we feel it's a useful tool for diagnosing non-Wi-Fi wireless interference issues and empowering existing access points to adapt against interference.
Hi, Fitz Nolan, Yale University. In your presentation, you talk about different types of devices, so cordless phones and microwaves. Was that more for simplicity, or does the system actually have some kind of dictionary that maps a wireless signal to a specific known type? And if so, does that dictionary need to be updated over time as new types of devices come online?
Yes, definitely needs to be updated. And this refers to our prior work, AirShark, which sort of deals with the detection part of it.
Okay.
So what we did there was we tried to understand by performing a measurement study, we tried to look at what are the most popular devices, both in terms of the amount of activity and in terms of the number of instances that we observed. So we, using that measurement study as an input, we looked at the most popular devices, and then we built signatures to detect each of these popular devices. So once we can do that, then we talk about the difference impactness.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hi, Srinivas from Princeton University. Cool work. So I have two questions. So one is I'm trying to understand the motivation for differentiating devices of the same type. And the second question is, can you give some guidelines on how, so the density of the access points that you need to actually get good results from this, or in other words, how sensitive are your results to the density?
Right. So with regards to devices of the same type, I mean, there could be, for example, like multiple cordless phones in a building, and you probably want to, assuming that the interference is from the type cordless phone, you probably have to figure out which one it is. Which one of the devices is actually causing the trouble. For example, it could be dependent on the power levels of the cordless phone, right? One is operating at a low power, it's not really causing an interference, but there could be another cordless phone which is actually operating at higher power and it's causing interference. So I think it's important to sort of even distinguish between the devices of the same type. And about your second question, yes, the density of the access points does determine the accuracy, both in terms of the interference estimation as well as the device localization. More so probably in the case of device localization, because at least in interference estimation, all we need is one access point being able to hear the non-Wi-Fi device transmission. In terms of device localization, yes, we actually performed experiments with different densities. You can have a look at the results in the paper. And it turns out the results that I presented today were just 4 access points. So I think we get a fairly reasonable accuracy even with like a lower density of access points. But yes, the accuracy is only going to increase with higher density.
I thought I would add one question as well. In your work, you've used a commodity off-the-shelf card to take your measurements, which is really cool because they're really cheap and really easy to get. I was wondering if you could comment on, if you had more sophisticated hardware, what do you think you would gain? Do you think there's no need to have a software-defined radio or a channel sounder or whatever you'd like to use, and this is as good as anyone's ever going to do, and we can just stop here? Or do you think that you could do better if you had better hardware?
No, I think you can definitely do better if you have much sophisticated hardware. And then there are examples of prior work which have done that, where using the flexibility provided by channel sounders or software-defined radios, where you not only try to sort of understand what is that you're experiencing in terms of interference, but also be able to tackle that in a much better way. For example, designing new physical layer mechanisms which can handle such kind of interference in a much better fashion. But I think the contribution of our work was, you know, what could you do today to solve this problem? So using these Wi-Fi cards, you know, to what extent can we go? So I think that the line of work we're trying to take over here is sort of see what extent can we push the community Wi-Fi cards to see if they can sort of provide a functionality similar to those kind of sophisticated mechanisms.
Can I add to that a little? So I think it's a very important point, and I think Shravan answered most of it. I think one example I remember, we did a work about 3 years back in Mobicom where if we were able to use a vector signal analyzer, which has very sophisticated capabilities, we were able to actually tell apart different Wi-Fi cards from each other of the same make, manufacture, model, and stuff. So I think the capabilities can be significantly enhanced if you have very sophisticated hardware. And so, yeah, there is a range, and I think that's a very interesting question to study, you know, how much gives us how much more extra performance.
Thank you.
Thanks.